Welcome everybody to another episode of the Damage Report. John, I'd roll. It's Wednesday show. JR Jackson's in the studio.
I've been invited back on a Wednesday. I'm not sure what was going wrong last Wednesday.
You didn't cancel
this time. But for some reason, they were like,
that's good.
There was a Glenn Beck flow going through. There was way too much diversity on the Damage Report.
We are in fact gonna have Glenn Beck. So heads up for today. We have just enough show. Sometimes we have way too much show and then we have to like go at a breakneck pace. I tried not to do that this time, but I'm probably wrong, who knows. But we will have Glenn Beck. Basically, we have two different right-wing media figures who can't take diversity. One in pop culture and one in politics. And perhaps we can figure out by the end of the show, which of these is a worse guy with the worst take. But we're gonna get to both. It's Tucker Carlson and Glenn Beck.
Let's get this out of the way first of all. John has a nice summertime look going. This is like a picnic shirt.
Really? Yeah, I've worn this shirt 100 times, but thank you.
It's a summertime flow.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Well, you look very picnicky as well. Perhaps a brunch. He's got a very brunchy look going.
Don't try
get this
that.
Man a mimosa.
Don't try it. I was still kicked out last week.
Exactly, and it was a brunch show. So we could do that.
That'd be awesome.
They don't know what we're drinking. Yeah, this could be a mimosa right now. You don't know.
I mean, I got vodka right here.
Okay, it's probably not. Anyway, it's probably not legal anyway. Okay. We were doing a show. So we're gonna have that. We're gonna have an international journalist gonna join us to break down the current situation in Sudan, which has a new power sharing agreement that could resolve the situation, but we're gonna attempt to figure that out with the journalist's help. We've got the latest on our concentration camps at the southern border and lots more. Actually, just a little bit more, but we're gonna start with that little bit more.
Yes.
With Donald Trump and Epstein as well. It's gonna be a little while until we know what ends up happening with Jeffrey Epstein. We're gonna have to follow the legal troubles. But for Donald Trump, the concern that's been out there for some time that theoretically he, as well as other wealthy, well-connected billionaires like Bill Clinton, not a billionaire, but connected to Epstein, and others could be brought down at the same time, Donald Trump is having to respond to that. Now, most of the concerns about Donald Trump have come up over the past few years, but one thing that's sort of driven conversation about this is the quote that we've showed you before, when back in 2002, he told New York Magazine, "I've known Jeff for 15 years, terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side." Which is not, that's not just creepy at the time, and creepier now that we know that Jeffrey Epstein was doing terrible, terrible things. That's just a really weird way to say that regardless. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do. Everybody likes beautiful people, first of all. Stop giving yourself credit for like having lust. I don't even understand what that is as an identity. But that kind of comment gives people some concern. So Donald Trump was asked about this, and here is what he said.
Well, I knew him like everybody in Palm Beach knew him. I mean, people in Palm Beach knew him. He was a fixture in Palm Beach. I had a falling out with him a long time ago. I don't think I've spoken to him for 15 years. I wasn't a fan. I was not, a long time ago. I'd say maybe 15 years. I was not a fan of his, that I can tell you. I was not a fan of his.
Okay, so that I can tell you is definitely one of those tells for Donald Trump. I forget who it was, but they pointed out whenever he says, he talked to someone, they said, "Sir, that's a tell, definitely." Uh-huh. And that I can tell you is also definitely a tell.
Yeah, it's crossed with I can tell you that and that I can tell you. It's the same thing, it's just
exactly
mixed up a bit.
And so there you have him repeatedly saying Palm Beach because he was sort of flustered. And he said, "I haven't talked to him in 15 years. Wait, when was the last verified, documented time that we talked that is irrefutable? It was 15 years? Okay, I'm gonna go with 15 years. I haven't talked to him for 15 years. Now, to be fair, I don't know why we would, but we're gonna be fair. Supposedly, they did have a falling out. But the idea that you're gonna rewrite history and say that you never liked the guy, you were never a fan. I mean, you were talking to a magazine about him, calling him a terrific guy, and how it's so awesome that he, like you, two people alone in the world, like young people of the opposite sex. And so do you think that this will be successful? I mean, I'm sure his fans are gonna, they'll buy whatever he says, but his attempt to push Epstein away from him,
is it's weird. This 15 years seems to be the tick as well as I can tell you that. Because at the interview in 2002, he's known him for 15 years. Now in 2019, it was 15 years ago the last time he talked to him. There's a 15-year gap every time something's bringing up with Epstein and this guy. But yeah, of course, with his supporters, they're gonna believe whatever he says willingly. And also they'll bring up people like Bill Clinton who had to come forward and re-release a statement because Epstein knew everyone, right? So he whatever kind of activities he was involved with, I don't care who it was that was, what side of the political aisle they're associated with, what they've done previously, what kind of support they've had from whatever supporters. If you're involved with it, the problem is the child rape. So yesterday, Kellyanne Conway was annoyed that people were asking about the labor secretary and his situation with them. Mm-hmm. And why don't you guys talk about the rapists? Hey, let's talk about all the rapists. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that because they're the ones that are covering this part up and saying it's been 15 years since the last time I heard from him. It's been 15 years since the last time I called him a terrific guy. But no, it's as long as it stays in news cycle, it's where more layers are going to come off.
Yeah.
And honestly, before it gets, if it would ever get to Trump, it's going to get to other folks first.
Yeah, and that Kellyanne Conway, that's such a BS argument. Why don't you talk about the rapist? Well, he's facing charges. It looks like maybe we got him this time. Why don't we talk about the people who stopped us from getting him last time?
Yeah.
Like Acosta. Acosta is not being held without bail right now, thus it makes it a more relevant thing to talk about. And we're gonna have a little update
actually,
on him,
you know,
a little bit later on.
This is another one of those moments when it's really easy to just, from Trump's point of view, to admit that you knew the guy, admit that you were friends with the guy, because you've said it before, let that normal history live and just say, you know, I had no idea he was doing these things. Sure, I had fun with him, but I had no idea he was doing these things, and it's appalling. But instead, you have to deny all attachment to him. That's what makes people think, huh?
Yeah.
What are you lying about?
Yeah, and look, I'm not gonna pretend that like, oh my God, Trump is gonna go down from this. He probably isn't. First of all, because powerful people, and especially Trump, never face any consequences for anything they do. Right. But also because we don't know that he did anything necessarily. Mm-hmm. So we are gonna talk about some of the recent reporting of things that have happened that are shady and suspicious, but it's not like case closed. So we just wanna put all the information out there. This is from the New York Times talking about a party that they both attended together. So it was a special sort of party. It was supposed to be an exclusive party at Mar-a-Lago. Donald J. Trump, don't put the J there. He wants you to, you don't have to do that. Trumpo's members only club in Palm Beach, Florida. But other than the two dozen or so women flown in to provide the entertainment, the only guests were Mr. Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. The year was 1992 and the event was a calendar girl competition. That's the best possible spin. Hopefully that's what it was. Hopefully it was not people who had been trafficked into having sex or being raped by wealthy men.
No, this is 5 years into
But it's a weird party regardless.
Right, this is 5 years into his friendship with Epstein because, you know, as he said, in 2002 it had been 15 years, so that was 87. So he's 5 years into this great friendship when they have their personal only party.
Yeah. Yeah,
for calendar girls.
I mean, I think we can all agree that that's a weird party. So look, the best case scenario there should, at the very least, undercut any argument that he's ever had that he's some sort of holy Christian guy guided by family values and whatever. It's anybody who still believes that is probably gonna believe that till the day they die. So that's not my hill to die on. We do have a little bit more information coming from one of the least reputable sources imaginable, Roger Stone, who once wrote, once when Mr. Trump visited Mr. Epstein at his Palm Beach home, he later seemed to joke about the scene of underage girls he witnessed there. Quote, the swimming pool was filled with beautiful young girls, Mr. Trump later told a Mar-a-Lago member, according to Mr. Stone. How nice, I thought. He let the neighborhood kids use his pool. That's like something out of a horror movie. Probably not true. I mean, it's Roger Stone writing it. There's no reason to believe that. But Roger Stone, at least as the time of that writing that, and possibly still, is a friend of Donald Trump. So I guess there's less reason for him to lie, except the fact that everything he says is a lie. But that's a creepy image that he sketches out there.
There's a lot of, again, we're going through speculation. So we already know that. I won't say it again because we know that's the approach. But there's a lot of dots that can be connected with Trump's history, Epstein's history, and then these types of situations that they get themselves into. We know when he was, his was Miss America or USA? His was Miss USA, I think, Trump's was. And we talked about how he busted in the dressing rooms of the women that were competing because he just thought he could do what he wanted. We heard the Access Hollywood tape, was it Access
girls
Hollywood,
in that
with
case.
I can grab whoever I want because they let me do it. There's a pattern here. That's what you have to admit, whether or not you like the guy or not. There's a pattern here with what he does and the people he associated himself with. And if you can't connect that, then you know we're not allowed to do that with anyone then.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that his biggest fans simultaneously love all of these things that he's said he's done, but can't actually admit that he's ever done it because that would be terrible. So you have to simultaneously hold these two positions. And the reason why I think Trump might be nervous about this is that his movement, I don't know that he should be all that nervous because they will love him till the ends of the earth. But the movement is based on, I'm gonna come in and clean up this dirty system where the powerful get away with whatever they want. Now, he hasn't done anything about that, but his followers are willing to accept inaction. But now we have an example of that, an exemplar of how much leeway the rich are given to do whatever they want. And in the particular area that the Trump supporting QAnon conspiracy theorists say they care the most about, raping children. So Donald Trump can do nothing to drain the swamp, they'll accept that. But if he's implicated with one of the people who's the best possible example of everything the movement says it's fighting against, that's gonna be a little bit harder for him.
Slightly.
Slightly, a little bit harder. Okay, so we're gonna take a short break. We come back, more accounts of what's going on down at the border coming from children being held in these concentration camps after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
For the last few weeks, we as a country have started to take seriously the crisis down at the border and the conditions in the concentration camps that our government is running down there. That was the last couple of weeks. This week, hey, there's new news, important news, Epstein and all that is really important. But I worry, as I always do, that people's eyes have already gone like off the prize. Like we were getting somewhere. And the thing is, while some of the media attention has moved away, the actual conditions there haven't significantly improved in any fashion that we can tell. And I wanna remind people how bad things are by talking about some recent reporting from NBC News. So this is coming from caseworkers who have talked with children being held in these camps. Here's some of what they found out. A 16-year-old Guatemalan boy held in Yuma, Arizona said he and others in his cell complained about the taste of water and food they were given. The Customs and Border Protection agents then took the mats out of their cell in retaliation, forcing them to sleep on hard concrete. So they worried that the food and water wasn't good, that it might make them sick or whatever. And when they brought that up, they were punished by the agents running the facility.
So I mean, if you want a direct case study and a few things, so this is the punishment for talking about things that are uncomfortable for you as a child. And also, as you come into the country, these border protection agents, like their role after hearing all of this demonization, because people don't like, you know, they talk about not being politically correct. One of the reasons for being politically correct, because it's so soft, is to not create a-holes like this, monsters in our country that are in a position of power to then feel, hey, as a country, we talk trash about these folks, we demonize them, they're no longer human. We talk about cantaloupe calves, and we talk about how they're rapists and murderers and drug dealers and gang members. You know what you do to those people? You do whatever you want to those people because nobody cares about them. So when you see a 16-year-old kid, also that when you see a 16-year-old kid, he's actually adult age looking. So you can do whatever you want to him because he's a threat to you. Yeah. So as these two worlds converge, we've got our people in power taking out their anger on children because we've demonized them long enough. And the children are looking up going, I came here for this?
Yeah.
I'm escaping life-threatening things for more life-threatening things.
Yeah.
What do you think their perception of America is gonna be after that?
Yeah, probably pretty ruined. And We've got some more accounts. As we go through this, one of the sort of strains fighting in the background is the fight against the idea that this is just a problem of funding. AOC has been trying to keep people focused on that because that's the idea. Is it just, there's a lot of people, they need more money, that's why the conditions are so bad. Okay, well, in that first case where they punish the kids by taking away their stuff, that's not an issue of funding. I will ask you, is this next one an issue just of funding? A 15-year-old girl from Honduras described a large bearded officer putting his hands inside her bra, pulling down her underwear and groping her as part of what was meant to be a routine pat down in front of other immigrants and officers. The girl said she felt embarrassed as the officer was speaking in English to other officers and laughing during the entire process. So is that a funding issue where if they had had more resources, then the guy would not have molested this little girl and joked about it with other officers? I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe if we just pay him more. Like, where's that money going to? Mm-hmm. These are the specifics of this debate that need to happen. Because let's go ahead and connect it to the funding that was just given, that was granted through Democrats to what Trump wanted without any stipulations of how to treat human beings in these these concentration camps. Once you don't enforce it, this will continue to flow through. Now, again, going back to how this spreads. So this one particular child molester officer then turns to his cohorts and laughs about it. Mm-hmm. What do you think the rest of those guys are going to do the next time? Like, oh, my turn.
Yeah.
And then we have a whole different problem on our
hands. This is not, he didn't do it in private. He did it in front of other people and they felt, yeah, that's normal. I'm not going to stop him.
Not only do other officers see it, but other kids see it. Mm-hmm. And she's embarrassed in front of the other kids and other kids go, That could happen to me.
And if she complains, what will happen to her? I mean, we've seen if you complain about the food, what if you accuse one of them of being a rapist? What are they going to do to you then? More counts. Nearly every child interviewed by the HHS caseworkers after leaving the Yuma border station reported poor sleeping conditions. A 17-year-old boy from Guatemala reported having to sleep outside even though his clothes were wet from having recently crossed a river, likely the Colorado River. Again, is that a funding situation that they made him sleep outside in soaked clothing? I kind of doubt it. Other children described being scared of the officers and said the officers would get angry if they asked for anything. One child wore soiled underwear for 10 days he was in the border station because he was afraid to ask the officers for a clean pair. That is a perceptive, wise child because he probably would have been punished if he had complained. But again, as I said, there are people trying to get it across to the country that this is not just an issue of resources. AOC is probably the principal amongst those, and she brought it up again yesterday saying, to Kellyanne Conway, curious how you're going to defend the child sexual assault that seems to be happening on your watch. Remind me again how sexual assault is a funding problem, because last I checked, ending this is about holding abusers to account, something you can't seem to do. Because when Kellyanne Conway, representing the Trump administration, had gone on the media recently, she said that people like AOC are the problem because they voted against this funding bill, and funding, after all, will be the solution to all these problems.
She also went in front of the cameras, we mentioned this earlier, Kellyanne Conway, when they were asking about the child rapist, Jeffrey Epstein, and said, why don't you guys focus on the pig who was raping the little girls? Hey, we've got CBP officers over there molesting little girls and probably raping
hundreds
as well
of accounts
too.
Of sexual assault.
Are we going to talk about the pigs that are doing that there?
Mm-mm. Nope, we're going to talk about something else.
We got to give them more money.
Yeah, and so one of the big concerns about that money too was that the Senate bill was specifically designed to make sure that there is no controls on how the money is spent. And our concern is they're going to set up more camps or they're going to use the money to build a wall. Some people say, you're being ridiculous. The bill is supposed to help people, so they're going to help people. Well, a report also came out yesterday that the border security and ICE are setting up 3 more of these camps, even though they said that there were no future construction plans. And so AOC tweeted about that, saying DHS and ICE are flagrantly violating congressional orders, just as we said they would. Yet it was Ilhan, Ayanna, Rashid, and I that were wrong to oppose throwing more money to abusive agencies, right? Well, that was when they had their regular funding. Now, billions of new dollars are going to be thrown their way. What are they going to do with that money? Probably not fix the problem with the molestation, the horrible sleeping conditions, and the terrible food, if I had to guess.
Sometimes facts just hurt. You know, you can keep getting mad about it, but as long as she keeps delivering, and these other brave younger congressmen and women, as long as they continue to speak facts, I mean, you can't deny that. Yep. So just come with more facts because it's happening right in front of us. You can either ignore it and look like the bad guy and be on the wrong side of history, or you can do something about it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after this.
The United States is the kindest, most open-minded place on the planet. The U.S. has done more for other people and received less in return than any nation in history by far.
So that's Tucker Carlson last night on Fox News, delivering sort of the foundational pacifying myth that his commentary is designed for the audience. It's, we have been great, we've done so much, now we don't have to do anything. And understand that that came at the beginning of a segment designed to attack Representative Ilhan Omar in an incredibly racist fashion, even for Tucker Carlson, even for Fox News. We're gonna show you that video, but there it's that we've done so much and we get no credit. That to me, like you could, there's different levels of that. But for the people watching Tucker Carlson, that's all they wanna believe is we're greater than we get credit for. Why is everyone complaining when we've been so nice?
It's so weird. No, I guess the end game for a lot of the folks like this guy is praise. Mm-hmm. Bow to me. Show me that I'm superior to you. You're a lesser person than I am. You know, you came to me and I gave you this and you dare say anything bad about me? Why do you care? You know, sometimes people give to charities and stuff, they do something back, give back, maybe they made it out of a certain community and they're giving back, but you don't ever hear about it. Mm-hmm. And they go, you know, I'm not looking for the praise. I'm looking to actually help that community because that's what I care about. Not about the tax write-offs strictly, or not about you talking about how great of a person I am so I can get some award, but because I care about that community. So does Tucker Carlson care about the country or does he care about getting praise? Because by the way, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything.
Oh, we're gonna have some examples of exactly that too. And we're gonna tie in the reporting from yesterday of Mitch McConnell on reparations and the fact that his great-great-grandparents had some slaves. But let's move into the Ilhan Omar. So here is the first of two videos of him attacking the new representative.
Ilhan Omar has an awful lot to be grateful for, but she isn't grateful, not at all. After everything America has done for Omar and for her family, she hates this country more than ever. In a recent piece in the Washington Post, the reporter put it this way, quote, in Omar's version, America isn't the big-hearted country that saved her from a brutal war in a bleak refugee camp. It wasn't a meritocracy that helped her attend college or vaulted her into Congress. Instead, it was the country that had failed to live up to its founding ideals, a place that had disappointed her and so many immigrants, refugees, and minorities like her, end quote.
What you saw there seems completely reasonable. First of all, the idea that if you get into elected office, you're not supposed to question anything or change anything is ridiculous, and he doesn't actually believe that. He doesn't want Republicans to get elected and then just like twiddle their thumbs all day long. The idea that if you believe that there's anything wrong with the United States, you hate the country, is again something not consistently applied to Republicans and Democrats. Everybody thinks that the country has problems that need to be fixed. It's just when it's us thinking that the problems need to be fixed, then it's hate, of course.
What was the whole thing about make America great again? I remember some guy had
Why did it need to be made a great? Wasn't it already great?
Why do you hate America?
It's yeah, but of course, it's like virtue signaling. It's like being triggered. All of those things, politically correct. These are all terms that are applied only in reference to when you're a lib. If you're a progressive and you do something, these terms are applied to you. If you're on the right and you do the exact same things, language just doesn't apply to you, I guess.
The final message is shut up.
Exactly. But his final message is far worse because right there he's saying, how dare you not, it's not enough that he puts his boot on your skull. You have to kiss the boot and she's not being grateful enough. But he goes on and attacks her some more.
If anything, that's an understatement. Omar isn't disappointed in America. She's enraged by it. Virtually every public statement she makes accuses Americans of bigotry and racism. This is an immoral country, she says. She has undisguised contempt for the United States and for its people. That should worry you, and not just because Omar is now a sitting member of Congress. Ilhan Omar is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. A system designed to strengthen America is instead undermining it. Some of the very people we try hardest to help have come to hate us passionately. Maybe that's our fault for asking too little of our immigrants. We aren't self-confident enough to make them assimilate so they never feel fully American. Or maybe the problem is deeper than that. Maybe we're importing people from places whose values are simply antithetical to ours. Who knows what the problem is? But there is a problem. And whatever the cause, this cannot continue. It's not sustainable. No country can import large numbers of people who hate it and expect to survive. The Romans were the last to try that, with predictable results. So be grateful for Ilhan Omar, annoying as she is. She's a living fire alarm, a warning to the rest of us that we better change our immigration system immediately or else.
So look, that rant there was horrible for a lot of reasons. I think the single largest one is that that was just the replacement myth. That's the white supremacist thing. They're bringing in these black and brown people and they're replacing good white people. He used slightly different language, but that's all it is. That's what his show is. It is taking the worst white supremacist conspiracy theories that they're using to activate domestic terrorists. You gussy it up a little bit, you put it on Tucker Carlson, and suddenly it's more mainstream.
Yeah, it's how it works. So I was looking at some of the supporters of this, and they said, he didn't say anything about race. How are you guys calling this a racist thing? So some of the words were, he said, for its people being Americans, and he's talking against Representative Omar. So she's not one of the people. She's not American.
And she hates America's people.
Yeah.
But she was elected by them, and by she the is way, one of them, but and suddenly
and,
not.
Yeah, and the previous piece, they're talking about how she was vaulted into Congress. This country allowed her to get vaulted into Congress. Were you in support of her getting vaulted into Congress? Mm-hmm. You were against this. Does that mean you're anti-American? Because America got her into Congress, but you were against her getting into Congress. Mm-hmm. You anti-American POS. Anyway, on top of that, he goes, they hate us. She's not fully American because they didn't assimilate correctly. All these things, and in the survival or else lines.
Now I go
or else you're gonna die. Take up arms and find anybody who looks like this because they're anti-American. We have to change it or else. We have to change it or else. That's a cry for violence.
Yeah.
Keep it real. Just because you don't say the N-word to a black person doesn't mean you're not a racist. I'm just tired of that old. There's been four times now. The arguments are so transparent by now. Mm-hmm. Just because you don't explicitly say the word doesn't mean you're not a racist. Just get away with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense anymore. It never did.
So if you watch our program, what do you learn about Ilhan Omar? Is that she's working with Bernie Sanders on a plan to get rid of student loan debt. If you watch Fox News, she is undermining America and will probably kill you and your family. That's the lesson. Again, by the way, and this is just a reminder. When you go on Tucker Carlson's show, this is what you are normalizing. This is what you are making more mainstream. That you do your little segment and then you go home and then he spreads the replacement myth of white supremacists.
And after they say he didn't say it, go, or else what?
Yeah. But, and by the way, that's the same guy that called Iraqis illiterate semi-primitive monkeys. Just a reminder of who he is. And again, I want you to be ready for this sort of argument to be made again, because we've seen it twice in 2 days with him and with Mitch McConnell. So he says they need to be grateful because of all the great things we've done as a country. We are a big-hearted country that allowed these refugees to come in. He's referring to from Kenya, so she's Somali, but they were Kenyan refugees. So at the time, unfortunately, the internet doesn't go back that far enough. Was Fox News advocating for those Kenyan refugees to come in? If Tucker Carlson had been on the air, would he be doing segments about how we should bring them in because of how big-hearted we are? I mean, we don't know, we can't go back, but I do know that he was against anybody coming in from Syria, obviously. He's not a fan of any migrants coming in from Latin or South America. So we can speculate that he, in fact, would not have been in favor of that. And this is how it works. You could go back to any examples of this. The conservatives will be arguing against any beneficence, any big-heartedness. Some people who go beyond that, who are good people, will fight to allow some people in. And then the fact that those people did it will be used by conservatives later on as evidence of why now we don't need to, because we've already done so much. When Mitch McConnell was defending not doing reparations, he said, do we really need reparations? I mean, after all, we fought a civil war. We did the Civil Rights Act. We elected a black president. Did you do any of those things? No, conservatives fought against all three of those things. Some people did the right thing. And the fact that some people did the right thing will be used by conservatives in all cases to make sure that nothing else good is ever done. And that's just the pattern that plays out. We drag the country forward inch by inch, and our efforts are used as evidence of why we need to move no further.
And then once it's done, they take credit for it. Oh, I remember back in the day when we worked for civil rights? No, you didn't. You'd have been against it. If you were around Martin Luther King was doing everything he was doing, and by the way, many other civil rights activists, you would have hated them just with the rest of the conservatives that were doing it at the time.
Exactly.
Keep it real.
Don't give me BS about Republicans versus Democrats. We're talking about conservatives, and conservatives were consistently against all of this. It doesn't matter what party they happen to identify with, thanks to realignment at that particular period in American history. talk to Dinesh D'Souza if you want to spread that BS. Anyway, I do want to give you Ilhan Omar's response to this incredibly, shockingly, blatantly racist and Islamophobic rant by Tucker Carlson. She said, not going to lie, it's kind of fun watching a racist fool like this weeping about my presence in Congress. No lies will stamp out my love for this country or my resolve to make our union more perfect. They will just have to get used to calling me Congresswoman, which is great. She goes on to say, she was asked this morning, actually. She said, I truly believe he is a racist fool. She says, Carlson is weeping about the fact that we have an African-born member of Congress, the type of people that the likes of him think come from S-hole countries. The fact that he doesn't get the opportunity to ban me from this country, and now he has to call me a congresswoman, I'm sure pisses him off. Whew. Now, I still feel horrible and scared for her, because the obvious goal, whether they will ever admit it or not, is they want threats against her and possibly violence against her. That's what this whole campaign is about. They're not satisfied to just criticize her. They're not telling you that the fire alarms are going off. They're not saying or else to get you to tweet at her. And so I am worried for her, for AOC, for all of this new class that are being attacked constantly in an incredibly racist fashion. But I do like her strength in standing up to these attacks. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, more to get to. Just a few weeks ago, we reported on how more than 100 civilians had been killed while protesting in Sudan. There were reports of rapes and other abuses as well. Now, there have been some political developments that might improve the situation there. And joining us now to break down what's been going on is journalist Ismail Kushkush. Ismail, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you here. So I know that in America, the amount of political knowledge about what's happening in Sudan, either historically or currently, is obviously very low. So we appreciate your expertise. If you could get us at least briefly up to speed on what's been going on there, we'd appreciate it.
Right. So an agreement was made between the opposition Freedom and Change Forces and the transitional military government last Friday on how to establish a transitional government that would lead Sudan eventually to democracy. But I mean, to go back just a bit, I mean, for those who may not be familiar with the events in Sudan, you know, last December, large protests broke out against the rule of Omar al-Bashir, who had been in power for 30 years. The protests went up and down until April 6th, where there was a large sit-in in front of the Ministry of Defense. And that eventually led to some elements in the army to ouster the president on April 11th. And for 2 months, there had been a dialogue between the opposition forces and the government on how to transition, what kind of transition, what structure that transitional government would take place. That sit-in was attacked by the military on June the 3rd, leading to the killing of over 120, at least 128 people and the rape of at least 70. And so for the past month and a half, there have been debates on how to move forward. The internet was shut down, which was just restored yesterday. But people, you know, are looking forward to, you know, this new agreement and the hope to transition into a genuine democracy.
So I've read up on the agreement, and it has multiple different stages that eventually lead to democracy, at least in theory. Can you tell us how that's going to proceed over the next few years?
Right. So the first thing is with the structure, and that has been, you know, the thorny issue from the very beginning. The agreement says that or lays out that the there will be a division of power between civilians and military, five civilians and five military, with an 11th civilian to be agreed upon between both parties. There will be a rotating leadership of the Sovereignty Council, and the military will take over for the first 21 months, to be followed by 18 months ruled by the civilians, and then that would lead to elections and the establishment of a civilian government.
So I have to wonder, are there concerns about the initial period of close to 2 years, not quite 2 years, being led by the military, especially considering what's been going on recently, the killings and the rapes and all that? Is there concern that if power is given to the military for that period, that they might be hesitant to give it up after the allotted period?
that's the million-dollar question, and that's where, you know, many people are concerned with, will the military be true to its word? Will it allow for a transition to the second part of this transitional period where civilians would lead and then eventually to election? Given the history of the military in Sudan, given that many top members of the military were either involved in the massacre of June 3rd or even were a part of Bashir's regime, many are hesitant to believe that the military will stay true to its word. There have been many parties involved in shaping this agreement, regional groups like the African Union, regional governments like Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia, and so forth. But many of the activists, this has caused division in the street. Some are against the agreement. Some say this is the best chance that we have at the moment. So it's really a matter of wait and see.
And so what will you be looking for over the next couple of years? What will be signs that might give you hope? What will be warning signs that you're going to be on the watch for as we proceed through these stages?
Right. So the first thing is in the establishment of the Legislative Council or the government. The government is supposed to be a government of technocrats. How that government is established, who are the major figures in this government, I think will be the first thing to look at. I think as far as grassroots activism, whether activists will maintain organizing on the ground, pushing for key issues, what has made this uprising different from past uprisings in Sudan or even in the region. The idea that activists had rejected immediate elections tells you something of the depth of thinking, because democracy is not simply about elections; it's about establishing institutions, and this is why activists wanted a longer period of transition. Mm-hmm. So I think if activists still, push for the spreading consciousness, looking out for how institutions will be established, I think that's going to be a major factor. And then also to look at what the military and what regional powers that support the military, what actions that they might take, whether it might go back on its word or so. I think that those are a few things that we need to look at.
Well, Ismail Kushush, we appreciate you joining us and explaining the situation in Sudan currently. We would love to check in with you as the political and perhaps military situation develops in that country in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break here. We come back a little bit more before we close out the show.
We went to Frozen, which I can't take the amount of diversity. Okay, I just, I can't take it. I can't take it.
So, like a lot of people in LA, Glenn Beck just can't even anymore. But this is from Frozen the Musical, which is Frozen is too diverse. Now, this isn't the movie, this is the musical, and they changed a few things, and he's losing it. Now, I know you want to jump in. We've got two clips of him explaining what it is that has driven him to the edge and perhaps over. Here's Glenn Beck explaining the unacceptable diversity in Frozen.
It's one thing to be colorblind and okay, whatever. But there's another thing about a story that happens in, Scandinavia. Uh-huh. All right. The king's not black in Scandinavia, especially if he has two very white daughters. It's just not happening. Why? Is it with the with all the Olaf was a girl. Olaf was a girl. The king was black. There was something else that was.
So he's, I can't take it anymore. There's the king. There was Olaf, and that was it. It was those two. I can't take it anymore. I'm driven to the edge. They made a snowman a girl. It's not a snow girl. It's a snowman.
Okay.
It's also a cartoon.
So what is it about Olaf being a girl changes what happened? Olaf was like the lovable snowman woman who thought she could survive in the summertime.
Yeah.
And assisted and helped out and was a playmate.
It's two. It's too much. It's one away from one. That's how much diversity there is. And that's, in his mind, it's set in Scandinavia. I don't know if it actually is. I think it's set in Magic Land because it's made up. It's all made up. But in a place where it's all lily white, two is too much. And one is just, it's a girl. There's other girls in the movie, man. You can't take a girl being in the movie. Does he know that a lot of like famous male cartoon characters are voiced by women? Does he know that? Wait until he finds out about The Simpsons, man. It's gonna blow his mind. But there's more. So here's some more complaining.
I kept thinking that they were gonna have what's her name that sings Let It Go come out, you know, because they're talking now about the next movie that she's gonna come out as gay, as lesbian. And I'm like, I just can't take it.
So have they already established that if Olaf is a girl? Because isn't Olaf the romantic interest of one of the two like girls, right, in the kingdom? The two princesses.
The romantic interest. No, Olaf is a snowman.
So he seems to get it. No, dude, it's just a snowman. Wait, that totally undercuts my argument. Yeah. So they're having this debate about too much diversity and something that one of the two people doesn't even know what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
He doesn't even know the characters. It's a snowman. So you got Black King, how dare they? Makes me think about Obama, pisses me off. You've got a girl snowman who he admits is just a snowman. And now there might be a lesbian. Oh my God. So now it's up to three, theoretically. There might be three. If one girl, one Black King and one lesbian makes this so you can't even, what neighborhood can he walk through without collapsing into a ball of tears and urine?
He can't take it. He can't. By the way, again, now I'm even blanking on the names. I know that the younger sister is the one who's like the radical who pushes through and tries to marry the other side of the
I don't remember her name, but I think it's Kristen Bell, I think, plays that character.
And also, so the main character who's the Frozen is the one who runs up in the mountain and sings Let It Go.
Miss Frozen, yes.
So, by the way, who cares if she's gay?
Mm-hmm.
She's alone.
Mm-hmm. You know, she might have some advice for you if it bothers you that much. Would you like to hear it?
If you could just
listen to any little kid over the last few years.
So what Glenn Beck is missing is representation. Mm-hmm. So what they don't like, and since if you float through the world being the superior one in your own brain, and then you finally see other folks. Well, he mentioned, oh yeah, I know everybody wants us to be colorblind. That's exactly the opposite of what people who have a mind want. They want you to see color, recognize it, and effing respect it. That's the problem. You've overlooked people that you've seen as beneath you your whole life. And now you have to go, oh, now I gotta look at a girl. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I gotta look at a Black father. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, now I gotta look at a gay woman by herself in the mountains. Why is that so hard?
Because
you've had to overlook them your whole life? No, we want you. The whole thing, I don't see color, no. Start seeing it.
That was his idea and people like him the whole time. That was never what was requested.
Yeah. It's more like ignoring color. You're like, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I can get by without them, or I can use them to propel myself, which is of course other things the white supremacists do. So when they say, oh man, I have an employee who's Black. Oh yeah, my nephew is Black. So you're using them to propel yourself. You use Black people. What's what we've done from the beginning, or minorities in general.
I know that like we're progressive. So we're supposed to be, we're told by people like Glenn Beck and Tucker Carlson and all that we're supposed to be weak. We can't take real life. We complain, we're triggered all the time. Microaggressions, all that. Dude, you can't take a girl snowman. Like that's the lowest bar imaginable. That bar is so low, it's deep in the snow. You can't even see it. You can't take a Black dad. You can't take a lesbian, like it's a cartoon. She's not gonna sleep with you either way, whether she's straight or a lesbian.
No, I'm sorry, by the way, I don't know if the play is the same as the movie, because by the way, their parents, they die at the beginning.
So I don't know.
Your black dad that you don't like, he's dead, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly, rejoice in that.
Maybe it's different in the play.
Like if you can't take some diversity in Frozen, man, just pack it in. Just pack in that snowball and just you're done, you can't take it. Anyway, but we're trying to work towards a world where people will actually like that and not be so scared of it. Okay, thank you so much. As always,
this was fun.
Glad to have you here. That was fun.
I should take every Wednesday off, so I can have fun. Like
we'll see. We'll see. Okay, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.